Progressive Talk from a grassroots perspective. She'll be taking your calls. 9 o'clock, Press Watch. Chris Andre with Air Cascadia at 10, 10:15 Flashpoints. Between the covers at 11, David Naiman talks to Jeff Vandermeer about his new novel, Born, a book that's been called simultaneously harrowing, dark, dangerous, funny, and uplifting from the author of the Southern Reach trilogy. And at 11:30 on the film show, we'll look at Portland history on film with new projects that explore the history of Vanport and the Portland Rose Festival. All of that because of generous support from KBOO members. And if you'd like to be one, please go to kboo.fm and click on donate. It's 7:59.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Hedges takes a provocative look at the current state of revolt in the United States and will recount the U.S.'s continuing history of domestic terrorism while outlining ways for communities to resist before it's too late. Again, that's Chris Hedges, Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune into KBOO on Sunday, May 28th at 10 p.m. for a live broadcast of Thirsty City. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop night at The Know, and Sunday, May 28th will be a benefit for KBOO. Performers include Libretto, Mike Crenshaw, DJ Wicked, Burial Ground Sound, and many more. Again, that's Thirsty City, hosted by King Tim 33 and a third, Matt Fu, and Northern Draw, Sunday, May 28th, starting at 8 p.m. at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland, and also broadcast live at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Bread and Roses Friday, May 26th at 6 p.m. Devin Febriello and Kat Meow Garcia talk about the upcoming Real Voices Summer Camp for female and non-binary youth.
We need to work toward producing and creating films and television from maybe some other vantage points.
I was slowly learning how to deconstruct these images and reconstruct them in a way that represented me and my feelings and my stories.
We'll also hear from Kai Tillman about navigating the film industry as a trans person and a new workshop he's piloting for women identified and trans people.
The idea of the workshop is to create an environment that's safe, that people can feel comfortable asking questions.
And featuring surprise guest Miso.
Hello, podcast.
Bread and Roses, May 26th, 6 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland 90.7.
Get up, stand up. Stand up.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am your host, Joanne Hardesty. Are hate crimes on the rise since our 2016 November elections? The answer, especially in Oregon, the answer is a resounding yes. 10 days after the election, the Law Center, the Southern Poverty Law Center, reported a record 867 hate incidents nationwide in the first 10 days after Donald Trump's election. In Oregon, there were 33 incidents of hate crimes reported in that 10-day period. I have heard and from community members that this appears to be a emerging issue and crisis here in the state of Oregon. In fact, it appears that since the elections and probably because of the election results, hate crimes seem to be much more prevalent and in places where you really would be shocked to find them. So, for example, in November, there was a Willamette University student who reported walking to his dorm after class when a car full of people started yelling racial slurs at him. They called him very derogatory terms that I won't repeat for Asian Pacific Islanders. And the car followed him and just continued to harass him. Jan Carson with the ACLU of Oregon has confirmed that people who engage in this behavior are really revealing their intolerance and fear of people who are different than themselves. This is one of the most underreported crimes in our country. And so if you think that there were 33 reported crimes, how many of these crimes are happening each and every day in our community? And community members, either out of fear, out of ignorance, don't know where or how to report them. If you'd like to join the conversation, by the way, there's no guest today. I thought I would talk about things I care about and ask you to call and do the same. So if you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call is 503-231-8187. I also want to thank the listeners for supporting us during our spring membership drive. I know it was it's a hard time. It's a hard time for everybody, but we appreciate our members stepping up, making sure that we can continue to bring you the kind of programming that you expect here at KBOO. So lots of love. Thank you very much. We appreciate you. And so hate crimes are up. There is a lot of fear in our community. As I talk to people, especially people who are Muslim, who are easily identifiable Muslims, I should say, as compared to Muslims that you wouldn't know. I mean, they're, you know, all Muslims don't dress in a certain way or look a certain way. But people who are Muslim, people who are immigrants and refugees. I have a girlfriend who works as a kindergarten teacher, and she tells me that one of her students told her to go back to Mexico. And a kindergartner. I was just pretty appalled by that. I just couldn't imagine that teachers are having that experience at the hands of kindergartners. And we know kindergartners weren't born thinking that somebody that appears to be Mexican should go back to Mexico. So we know that that's behavior that's learned at home. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So what else is going on in the community? So hate crimes are on the rise. We appear to be in the process of a national search for the next Portland police chief. We'll talk a little bit about that as the program progresses. In addition to that, we are now almost done with May. And we still have no community oversight board to make sure that the millions of dollars we're spending within Portland Police Bureau are being spent to actually reform how that agency operates. Because the community oversight board was disbanded at the end of January, the last city council and this city council could have prevented that from happening, and due to their inaction, there really is this void of community oversight. Oh yes, and let's talk about the Portland Police Union president, Daryl Turner, who is annoyed that the mayor and his announcement for the next police chief articulated the history of Oregon in Portland. It's racially exclusionary history that has been in the DNA of Oregon since its inception. I appreciated the mayor articulating that this is the city, if you're coming from another place on the planet, this is the city that you're coming to. And so I want our next police chief to understand that they're coming to a city that has been divided a lot of years about how policing should happen and who policing happens to. And so having the next police chief being able to articulate a vision of how they're going to create a inclusive, community-friendly police force that will work with the community and not be occupying forces that show up and intimidate and harass community members. Daryl Turner was offended because he said the implication was that Portland police officers are racist. And I would remind Daryl Turner that one of his colleagues actually was disciplined for putting Nazi memorabilia up in a public park. Daryl Turner may not remember that because under the last police commissioner, Charlie Hales, that police officer, Kroger, had his personnel record scrubbed clean, and all the references to his loyalty to Nazi memorabilia was removed from his service record. So if you, and today, I believe he is now working as a detective in Portland Police Bureau. And so I don't know about anybody else, but I think if Kroger showed up at my house to investigate anything, I certainly would not let him in because I know his history. But unless you know his history, you would assume that this is an upstanding police officer with no racist history. But that would be inaccurate. So Daryl Turner must have forgotten about his colleague who was actually disciplined for his loyalty to the Nazi party. He forgot about that. He's probably also forgotten how many young black men have been killed by Portland police officers because Portland police officers either thought they looked like they might be a gang member or they were in fear of their life. We have several young men who lost their lives because the car they were driving didn't fit who the police thought should be driving that automobile. And within seconds, minutes of their traffic stop, they were killed. And that was James Perez, and that was Keaton Otis. Daryl Turner may also be forgetting about the death of Aaron Campbell, who was following orders, who was talking with the police negotiator, and was shot and killed by Fresh Hour, who again is still on Portland police force after being fired. The union challenged him being fired, and for a four-year process, he sat home while the appeal was working, and he won his appeal. And so he came back, he got all his back pay, he got all his seniority, and he is now in a Portland Police Bureau uniform. And so when Daryl Turner says that he doesn't understand why the mayor would bring race into the conversation about the next police chief, Daryl Turner should review the history of Portland Police Bureau's actions and outcomes. Again, Portland Police has this long history of targeting young black and brown boys for enhanced enforcement. It's almost summertime, and every summer there's a new plan that Portland Police Bureau comes up with that is supposed to make our community safe. But in the end, what it basically does is target our young people for enhanced policing. And this has been the history of Portland Police Bureau. You know, I should invite Daryl Turner to come on this program. Actually, I did invite him last year, and he never actually would commit to a date to come. He was always so busy, he didn't have time to come. But I will invite him again. And as I invite you to go to your phone and give me a call, what's on your mind? 503-231-8187. It is my hope that this police search unearth some people who have some really innovative ideas about how policing should change in the 21st century and what it would look like to have a community-driven police department as compared to a police department driven by aggression and excessive force. Those are the things that I'm hoping to see as we continue to move through this process with the police chief. And let there be no mistake, the Portland Police Association Union is putting a lot of money into trying to convince the city council that Mike Marshman should remain Portland police chief. And it's clear why they want Mike Marshman to be police chief. It is because Mike Marshman is not pushing them to make the reforms as timely as they have to be. That is why he seems a good choice for the rank and file. Because Mike Marshman talks about reform, but Mike Marshman doesn't actually make the commitment to make reform happen. And so the police union is using all kind of tactics to try to pressure the city council to keep him. Just because he's local doesn't mean he's actually going to fix what's broken. Just because he's local doesn't mean that he's been able to even articulate any problems within the Portland Police Bureau. Every speech that I've heard him give since he's been back from his 3-week leave when he was investigated has been about how good Portland Police Bureau is operating. And that to me is not a chief that is critiquing whether or not the effectiveness of the actions by Portland Police Bureau are what the community needs and what the community wants. This is a big problem. And so the fact that the police union has a lot of money that they can now spend to try to influence the Portland City Council on the next police chief does not mean that we should not be looking for a change agent that will come in and fundamentally reform Portland Police. The problem with promoting people from within is that they have loyalties and they will, based on those loyalties, make decisions about assignments, promotions, and they will do that based on their loyalties. They won't do it based on whether or not these are the right people at the right time. And that's what we need. We need a chief. We need a leader that actually has a real vision about how you create a police force that works with the community rather than a police force that is an occupying force. There has been a survey that the city of Portland has put out asking the community to weigh in on what they want in the next police chief. But again, that's not how you get to the people who've been most influenced by police violence. So we're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. This is a really great topic to talk about, mainly because, you know, people who are staunch police supporters, the people who are like, oh, I believe in law and order, people need to recognize that, you know, while we like to imagine that police are these ultimate bastions of good that are only here to serve the community and, you know, can ultimately do no wrong, they have to come to grips with the fact that police have very often and still continue to be on the wrong side of humanity. And, you know, and so just be, I don't know, it's, you gotta, I work as a care provider, and, you know, historically care providers have not, I mean, it's only been within the last maybe 20 or 30 years that care providers have really come up in image, but it took the voices of the people who were being abused by care providers who had no oversight in order to be able to make care providers good.
Right.
And, you know, and it's like people don't realize that it's like without the community input, without the support, without the voices of the people who tend to be the most marginalized by police officers, that we can't reform the system. If we're really looking to reform, I mean, if we're just looking for people to placate and just say, oh yeah, well, you know, police are bad or can be bad or have been bad, instead of really looking at what it costs to really change it, nothing's going to happen. It's like, Martin Luther King talking about, you know, the negative peace, which is the absence of tension, as opposed to the positive peace, which is the presence of justice.
Right.
People want that absence of tension.
Right. That's right.
But the positive peace that would ultimately make police a good community force would have to come from the fact that, you know, justice would have to be served. Justice would have to be doled out. You know, people don't get that. People don't want to think, oh, well, you know, you can't. But then there's so much fear coming from police that if we start firing people, we're going to be understaffed and, you know, crime's just going to explode, when really crime has been getting better. It's just, you know, people, I don't know.
Well, the crime rate has been going down for 30 years. And policing has been becoming much more militarized, much more weaponized, much more aggressive in that time period. So the presence of crime has absolutely nothing to do with how policing plays out in this community. In fact, the police sell fear to the community so they get more resources. That's how it plays out.
Exactly. Right. And a lot of the time it steals from other municipal workers. You know, people are always talking about, you know, Blue Lives Matter. Number one, blue lives don't exist because unless you have blue skin, you're not a blue life.
Right.
You know, the police ultimately, by doing that, they suck funds out of other municipal worker funds that could be, you know, like education and infrastructure.
Healthcare, senior services, right. We spend, right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. So, of course, other bureaus are asked to cut, but we don't ask the police to cut. In fact, anytime they ask for millions of more dollars, case in point, last November, there was a ballot initiative that the city council sent to voters, and it was about taxing marijuana so that the people who had been most impacted by marijuana policy would benefit from this tax. The current mayor's budget gives $1.5 million of that money to the police. Now, the police are the ones that have benefited most from marijuana policy. So why would anybody think that out of a $2 million pot, giving the police $1.5 million of it is a good investment for the people who've been most impacted by marijuana policy?
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't even know about that. I missed that. That's ridiculous.
It just goes on and on. Right. Right. It's just like once you get you stick your finger in one hole in the dike, you find out that there are three more holes have sprung up because there is no community oversight. Because people sit in rooms with people who have a stake in the outcome and make decisions about how we spend our money. And then, but when you need money, you go to the public and you sell them one thing. And then once you get it, all of a sudden, now, last budget cycle, the police were the most important thing. The last mayor gave them a 9% pay raise, allowed all the old retired officers that we'd been waiting to retire come back for up to 7 years at full pay, so they'll get twice the pay for being there. And somehow, the police still need more money. I mean, talk about no accountability. It is the only agency in the city that overspends their budget by anywhere between $2 to $5 million a year, and there's never any accountability for it.
And if you criticize it, everybody comes, you know, people come after you and say, without the police, crime would just skyrocket. This is a really great topic. I'm glad that we're talking about it.
Me too. Well, thank you so much for your call. It sounds like you are paying attention. Thank you. You're at least someone who understands that we've got some issues here that we absolutely have to resolve. And as a care provider, let me say that we never, ever, ever, ever hear of someone being killed by a care provider because the care provider was scared that they might harm them. We've never heard of that, ever. But ironically, it's normal now for police to kill people who are running away or have little pocket knives because they are so fearful of what could possibly happen to them. I mean, how did that become normal? That's a rhetorical question.
You guys had an interview with this guy who wrote a, who was a former police officer who wrote a book, and he talked about the idea that the, that in the 70s, I believe it was, the focus came, because even then, I mean, even during the Black Panther era, when, you know, when the, when, you know, black, when black folks and, you know, brown folks too were more militant and actually even carried guns, there were less police deaths then than there are now.
Absolutely true.
But the focus became coming home at night, you know, coming home to your family.
Well, it's right. But it's interesting that the only people that it's important to go home in the police mind is the police officer. And that's wrong. That's
exactly.
Because if you're that fearful, you should get another job. I've got other folks lined up. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your energy and your enthusiasm for this topic. We're going to fix this. Have a good day.
We are. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Herschel. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi there. I've been following police work, and I go to the CRC meetings, and I was disturbed by the killing of this Qantas Hayes when he supposedly was reaching for a gun.
Right.
And in the course of my activities, I attend a ballet class, and the teacher is teaching these young kids how to get up gracefully.
Right.
Okay. So it's this kind of something for television, but I'll try it on radio, and it's for everybody to kind of get down on one knee and then one foot. One knee and one foot, and which is, I think, the position that Qantas Hayes was in. And then put your hands up or put your hands on your shoulders and then stand up from that position. And these little girls are learning it, and they can do it, okay? Mm. But not everybody's done it.
Right.
And the thing is, if you have a tendency to reach down for the ground to give yourself a push...
Right.
Bingo, you did what Qantas Hayes was executed for,
right.
Reaching for the gun that wasn't there.
Right.
I mean, it's something anybody can do as a test at home.
Right.
Do you have to reach for the ground, and that's their excuse for executing a guy. And then you're mentioning a search for the police officer, and I did follow this Matt Klug case, where the guy was, he was various charges, but none of the charges really resulted from any kind of criminal activity. The woman for whom he was arrested because he supposedly threatened and beat in her car didn't want to press charges.
Hmm.
So all of his charges were related to resisting arrest or not acting quite the way the police think he should act.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, he did nothing to be arrested for.
Right.
Except, you know, resisting arrest.
Right.
Okay, now this thing winds its way through the process, the ARC, and it goes before city council. And here is the police chief, and he presents a video that is really dark, and you can hardly make anything out. And because I go to the CRC meetings, I know that there is a clear video available.
Hmm.
But he presents this dark one.
Oh.
And, as evidence. And it doesn't have any sound either. And I know the clear video had sound.
Wow.
And it showed, you know, the bad language the police are using, you know.
Right.
So, as they normally do. And afterwards, the police chief says, and you can see from the video, you can clearly see from the video him kicking a police officer up against the wall. Well, the video he showed was absolutely dark. I couldn't clearly see anything.
Wow.
I mean, it's almost as though the police chief was performing for the written record or something like that.
Mm.
I mean, I don't trust the guy at all. And I do believe that it was obvious from the clear video that the police had overreacted.
Right.
The fact that a woman would not press charges, I mean, what does that leave you with? The guy in the car who's been arrested, and the only thing they have against him is resisting arrest, you know, assaulting an officer, which can be applied to anything. Like, you have three police officers sitting on you, what do? Well, you try and relieve the pain.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you raise a really interesting point, because the latest case with Terrell Johnson, 24 years old, killed by transit police officers. Was a case of supposedly he had a knife, but supposedly he was running away from the police officers when they shot and killed them. And I don't know if the grand jury is done yet, but the grand jury always comes back with the same conclusion, that the police officers did nothing wrong. There's no reason for me to believe that the grand jury decision will be any different in this case. But clearly, we must have some kind of moral standard that says that you don't actually shoot somebody who's running away. How could they possibly be perceived as a threat when they are running in the opposite direction?
I like everything you say, and I just believe that there are police officers on the force who just kind of look for these opportunities to shoot people. In the case of Qantas Hayes, reaching for a weapon that wasn't there.
Right, was close to the body as per the police officer's statement, right, which doesn't...
Whatever close means.
Right, I mean, right, exactly. Whatever close means.
Could be 50 feet. Yeah, I mean, if I was being arrested by police, I think I would kind of maybe drop the gun or, you know, but
well, and remember, it was a toy gun, right?
Yes.
And there were two incidents with toy guns that same day that I found a little hard to believe, because A, that's not a normal occurrence, and B, I don't know any 17-year-old black child that would point a toy gun at a police officer in this day and age, knowing what we've seen all over the country and here in Portland. But again, grand juries don't ask hard questions of police officers, so therefore, we never ever get these kind of common sense questions answered. I appreciate your call. I appreciate all your work with the CRC, which is the Community Review Committee.
Citizen Review Committee
of the IPR, which is the Independent Police Review, which unfortunately isn't independent, doesn't really review the police, but that's another long conversation. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate
it.
Have a great day.
Bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, George. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanna. Thank you for this very illuminating show. I just wanted to mention something that, yes, crime by what we would call ordinary citizens is way down from what I've read and heard here, but I've read elsewhere. It is. Something that could be mentioned, though, is that corporate crime,
is way up.
Way, way up, taking their profits offshore or continuing practices which kill people on the job at a chicken factory and so many things.
Yes.
And also, we might say that, I don't know if I'm being unfair to the police, but police crime, it's, I don't know if there's any published statistics, but police crime seems to be up. And I don't want to be unfair to the cops, because I think an awful lot of them are very, very conscientious, but we do have some in there who, just like you mentioned, one of them on the force who... Anyway, so I just thought I'd say that, and that's. I just want to listen to your program. I'll hang up, and thanks for this program very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Whoever the conscientious cops are, they need to have a forum to speak up, because they're not speaking up. And that's part of the problem.
Thank you, yes. My normal answer to that question is a good cop would not stand by and allow someone's constitutional rights to be trampled upon.
If they weren't able to avoid that, then they should resign in protest and say why.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and I'm frankly, as a mom, pretty tired of all this. I am... they talk about women having hypertension because of their diet and their exercise habits. But if that's what it was, women would have had that situation under control a long time ago.
Yes.
This stress, this constant stress, every time your child goes out the door, wondering if they're going to make it back, or if they do encounter law enforcement, that you're hoping that your child has the wisdom to be wiser than their authorities that they're supposed to respect.
Yes.
And it should not be like that.
That's right. No,
you
it
know,
shouldn't.
And you hear every day about, I mean, I just saw a story the other day about a woman who was admitted to the hospital because she saw the video of her husband being tasered to death. Everyone knows this is going on, and it's been acknowledged, but that somehow those in positions of authority somehow allow it to continue.
Right.
They should be just as outraged as the people in our community are.
Yes.
And like you said, when people show up to protest the execution of one of our kids, the police show up in riot gear.
That's right.
You know, what was that all about?
Right.
And you hear about people getting released from prison after doing 25 years for a crime they did not commit. I hear about that every week, somebody's released. Because there are people who, and attorneys who are working to get people, innocent people, released from prison. Why are they there in the first place?
That's
because
right.
The prosecutors allowed that to happen so they could stay their jobs and get their elections and do whatever they got to do and keep the Republican Party in place. This man that's Attorney General now is one of the scariest people in the world.
Right.
That Sessions man. You know, I mean, the system is set up to oppress people. So rather than fixing the thing, we just need to totally remove it and do something different. You know, the whole way the thing is set up is to oppress.
Right. Well, I think quite frankly, we've just got the wrong political leaders in place, because how can we live in what we pretend is a progressive city with
or
the
country?
Nobody assumes the country is progressive, but
no,
at least not after the last election.
We pretend like we're a democracy and land of the free.
Yeah, we do that. That's true. That's true.
We talk about people's rights being violated in other countries. And look what we're doing in the prisons. I mean, that's just, it's ludicrous.
Yeah,
a lot of reparations need to be made to a whole lot of people right about now. And somebody needs to start thinking about that if they really want to win the electorate, because...
Well, I thank you, and I appreciate what you have to say, and I agree with you, but I also want to caution you that the most horrendous laws that we got around criminal justice were passed by Democratic leadership. Republicans are not good on this issue, and Democrats are not good on this issue.
Let's
not pretend.
Afraid of being labeled a soft on crime.
Right.
Whatever,
let's not pretend that one party actually is better.
I agree with you. I just said that because right now the majority.
Well, right now we got crazy people all over D.C. So, but
right,
we've survived that before. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Have a good day. Bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Do we have any more callers? No. Okay, go to your phone. Give us a call. Want to know what you have to say about this issue. And so people have gotten my blood all boiling about talking about policing, because we're at a crossroads here in the city of Portland as it relates to policing. And the next police chief is going to have a huge job to repair the damage that's been done throughout the city of Portland as it relates to policing. And the last police commissioner, Charlie Hales, had this narrative about how under-policed we are, and how we needed more police officers because they were just understaffed. There's another big question that I'm not going to have time to get into in detail today, but I just want to put it out there, is that I still believe that we have to take police officers out of our schools. We've got to get them out of the middle schools, out of the high schools, and they have no business in elementary schools at all. It is absolutely a grooming process when police officers show up in a school environment. When police officers are on site, everything that happens becomes a criminal event, which means that we start criminalizing our kids in middle school because there are police officers that are called to interrupt juvenile behavior. Now, I got to say, if you are a teacher and you can't correct behavior without calling a police officer, just like the police officers who I think need a new job. I think maybe as a teacher, if you don't know how to discipline students without having to call law enforcement, then maybe you need a new profession as well. Because the reality is that today, when police officers are handcuffing children and carting them out of school buildings for doing what children do, we are starting the process of creating criminal records for children at a younger and younger age. And it's absolutely unacceptable. There is no reason that we have armed police officers inside our school. Unacceptable. Got to go. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was listening to your show and thought I'd call in.
Wonderful.
I'm a former federal cybersecurity whistleblower with 27 years of federal service.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2006, I found a back door into every computer system in the world. I actually proved it in federal court in 2010. I actually created the first national cybersecurity alert for the Department of Veterans Affairs, January 19, 2009.
Uh-huh.
And showed them that the electronic medical records and any web-based application was leaking people's information. And so my question, well, not really a question, but my comments are, I don't think people are really fully aware of what's been going on and being under martial law. We're basically under martial law, using technology as an invisible fence where we're tracked, monitored, and controlled and manipulated like lab rats. And what I've done is I've created a LinkedIn page. I've got almost 10,000 users, or 10,000 members who read my post. I've written over 600 articles on this, including the FEMA death camps and what's being sprayed into the atmosphere. It's called geoengineering. And basically, aluminum is being sprayed above us every day. When you see the chemtrails, most people think they're contrails, which is condensation from the airplane's engines. It's not. And if you want to look it up, everything I say can be reviewed on the internet. Like I said, under my LinkedIn page, my name is Michael Holt, H-O-L-T, Federal Cybersecurity Whistleblower. I've got members from all over the world, from senators to NSA to Homeland Security to IT experts, and I've challenged them all to prove me wrong. And what I point out is the manipulation and the government waste and fraud and abuse of taxpayers' money, whereas we're giving military gear to the police for citizens.
Right, right.
Okay.
And tanks and everything else, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
And there are over 800 FEMA death camps in the United States right now being built and monitored, to whereas when they do flip the switch, those who can be manipulated and brainwashed, basically, will be let loose. But the ones who they call descendants and naysayers will be jailed and imprisoned. Okay,
I'm gonna have to stop you because you're getting way down into the weeds of a conversation that we're not in today.
I'm just trying to explain.
I appreciate you trying to be clear for our audience. You've given people your LinkedIn page. If people are interested, they can go there and get more information. I will say that I have seen more use of body-worn cameras, recording
Correct.
Devices by Homeland Security, Portland Police, TriMet Police. I mean, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. So
I'm not talking about paranoid. What I'm talking about is facial recognition.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know.
And how
I know.
You are tracked.
No. I absolutely agree. I've seen it in action. I've seen it when protesters showed up to testify for the police contract. That was the first time I actually saw Homeland Security using facial recognition software to track everyone who showed up just to exercise their constitutional right. So I'm not dismissing what you're saying at all. I'm just saying you're getting into the weeds, and I got to move on.
I can rein it. I'll rein it back for you. What I'm really basically trying to expose is the martial law that's being implemented covertly on our citizens, and to bring awareness to it. That's all I'm trying to do.
And I think
I agree with you 100%.
Right. Yeah. I think that I would encourage folks to check out your LinkedIn page, check out your blog, because I got to say, a couple of years ago, you would be thinking, oh, this is like science fiction. But no, this is our current reality. Thank you so much for your call. Have a good day. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Kyle. Welcome to KBOO. Hi, Kyle. Annalise.
Hello.
Good morning, Annalise. How are you today?
Oh, fine. Thank you. Last night, Tavis Smiley on television interviewed Bill Moyers.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Moyers apparently has made a film or a documentary about Rikers Prison. And I think it's called Rikers. And briefly,
oh, Rikers. Uh-huh.
Rikers.
Mm-hmm. In New York, yes.
Yeah, in New York. And he... Briefly, you saw four black men being interviewed by Bill Moyers.
Right.
And it was so frightening that I don't think I can watch the documentary itself. These people were apparently, I think, if I understood it now, free from prison. And Bill Moyers made a documentary on what it is like. And they were saying that the violence in that prison, they could never have imagined that existed.
Right.
They didn't go into details, not in this short interview segment that Tavis Smiley did, but I don't think I could watch it, and that's how frightening this already was. So, but I won't make people alert to that documentary and see what that says about people in prison.
Thank you
for the program.
Thank you. Enjoy
your day.
Thank you. You too. Appreciate your call. Have a good day. Bye. Good morning, Kyle. Good morning, Kyle.
Yeah. Good morning. Very interesting conversations this morning. The gentleman on before Annalise was pretty amazing. I don't listen to stuff when they start mentioning FEMA death camps.
Right. Right.
That kind of is a red flag for me wait a minute, got a nut job here. But, now I'm starting to listen, starting to hear and starting to think, well, they do have places, these private security, private prison companies do build these buildings, and they are expecting more and more customers so that they can make more and more millions of dollars, off of prisoners. Anyway,
right.
That's another whole show.
Yes, it is, right.
and this thing can go so far. I mean, the facial software is another show. I don't even go to Home Depot anymore because you're so identified, and you sit there and you look up and there's a big monitor with your face on it.
Oh, everywhere, everywhere.
And
I won't
go to these places like that because they're using facial recognition software. And then the other thing that ticks me is, here's my ticked off session. And the other thing that ticks me off is, the news media comes out and goes, oh, these people with masks on ought to be arrested right off the bat.
Right.
Well, wait a minute, Some of them have real reasons that they don't want to be seen and with that because then they're going to get that facial recognition. They're going to be recognized on the facial recognition software systems, and then the police department will have a record on them.
Yes.
An unofficial record.
Yes.
And I think this unofficial record is kind of spilling over to officialdom when they arrest people for nefarious BS activities which don't really have any real laws against them, and then they create a record. So next time they go to shoot this person, it's pretty easy because then they can go to the news media and say, see, this person had a record. See, look, they've been arrested before.
That's how they send the press release to the media. First they go and look up their background, and the press release always leads with a criminal background if they have it. If it's not in the first sentence, they have never been arrested before. But then there'll be some other discrediting comment coming from the police and their press release to the media. And because the media is so lazy nowadays, they just report... the press release as if it's fact. So, yes, we've got some challenges that we've got to overcome, and how we get information to the public and how the public is able to access that information. So thank you.
I appreciate
your call.
Well, you know, the main point that I called up to talk about was really, and that so many other things exploded in front of me when I was listening, that to talk about was the fact that I think my whole idea is that I think police need to, we need to hire probably approximately twice the amount of police that we have now. Now that don't get worried. What I'm talking about here is that the next thing I'm going to say is these police need to then start doing 20 hours a week in social service situations like welfare offices, home, food, Meals on Wheels, anything. You know, we need to pay them to volunteer on the good side of society where they're helping people, because I see the police, and I've had enough contact with them, not illegally or whatever, but I've had to use them for certain situations, and I see that their attitudes are really in the toilet. And the reason their attitudes are in the toilet is because they live in that toilet, and they feel like the whole world is against them. They really do. You know, they look at us, they look at the outside world as the outside world.
Well,
you know,
so let me interject here. I think I don't agree that we need twice as many officers and then pay them to go to community organizations to volunteer. I certainly wouldn't want some of those people in a community-based setting at all. I would want to know that they have the right mindset to be able to engage in that process. But here's what
that's what I'm trying to get at.
But it's got to start at the front end. If you've ever gone to DPSST in Salem, where all law enforcement go through their first 16 weeks training, what you see is that they are training a military force. They line up. It looks just like boot camp. It acts like boot camp. It is a very militaristic training process that we put law enforcement officers through. What if...
And they've been doing that many years.
Right. And in fact, some scary folks who retire end up going there to be trainers, which is another show. But if we change the dynamic at the front end, where half the training was about weapons and crime solving and et cetera, and the other half was in human skills, how to de-escalate, how to engage people in a respectful manner, how to interact with people where they are, how to not assume that everyone you're approaching is a criminal if they are a certain skin color or if they're a certain age or if they are houseless, right? That should be half the training that police get. Unfortunately, they get 80% tactical training and then 20% people training. And the people training is really about how do you make people do what you want them to do.
Definitely. Right? I totally agree with
so
that.
So it starts...
I think that they need to start with the training first.
At the very front end,
right.
And then take away
that
military operation.
Right. And I'm just trying to get them to move into a situation where it's more service-based so that they can kind of get a pulse of the other side of the community.
Actually, they don't care. They don't care about the other. They don't care.
I know, but they become calloused and on the job, and they're starting right from the beginning with a callous. The military system is a callous system, face it. You know, so they're starting right off the bat with that. You know, then they're moving in from there into the streets, and then all they see is the negativity, and then it becomes them against us.
Well, I mean, my bigger question is how come there's not outrage by white folks when they see that when the police show up, when brown and black people protest in their military garb, in their spacesuits, why is there no protest from white folks when that happens? I don't hear a peep out of anybody,
which happened at the May Day parade. It was a parade where men, women, and children were, you know, enjoying the day, and they were parading, and then the police decided they're going to close it down and start beating heads, you know. I just, you know.
Over and over and over again. You know, I've got other callers lined up, yeah. And I'm about to run out of time. I thank you for your call. Right. I appreciate the dialogue. You have a fabulous day.
Thank you. You too, Joanne.
Thank you. Who else we got? Jennifer. Good morning, Jennifer. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a couple of issues to talk about. Let's see. I think last week you commented on how a lot of older white people don't... I'm Latina, 41. But how you are meeting a lot of older white people who don't support the police, kind of middle-class white people who don't support the police. And I wanted to talk about an experience I had at First Unitarian Church where the IPR and CRC went to talk about what they do.
Okay.
And, First Unitarian Church is very liberal. They have a lot of I went there actually for a protest training on how to be a protest, I guess.
Right. Was that the Nasty Women Get Stuff Done?
What was that?
Go ahead. What's your question?
It was a comment. So the CRC was there, IPR was there, head of the CRC, head of IPR, and then Mary, the city auditor.
Yes.
And everyone in the church was probably like 50 and older. I think it was all white except for me, and they were pissed. They had a lot of gripes about the police and about equal rights, and it was really moving to see how much they cared and how much they didn't like the police. And I wish that there was more organization for them to get involved. The head of the CRC, though, she's a woman, she's a lawyer, she's kind of young, and she's such in my opinion, a dislikable personality. And she says, well, you're free to come to the CRC meetings. But, I mean, she said it in a way that would make any sane person not want to go. And so
it didn't sound welcoming at all, huh?
Not at all. I mean, and to hear it from this kind of young, rude lawyer, I mean, who's going to take up that invitation? Nobody.
Right.
Nobody.
So, the First Unitarian Church organized this meeting. CRC members came, the auditor came, and people were asking really hard questions about police accountability, because that's what those systems are supposed to be about, right? Police accountability. And so what was the outcome? So how did you, when you left, how did you feel?
I felt wonderful knowing that white people were, you know, concerned about reforming the police as well. But I also was just exasperated that I couldn't do more, that there wasn't a way for them to get involved.
There are groups that are working on police accountability. In fact, since the election, there's been hundreds of them that have sprung up. But some of the long-term ones, like Portland Cop Watch, the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, the NAACP Portland Branch, I mean, there are groups that have been doing police reform forever. And so it's not that there isn't a place for people to engage. It's that what I have experienced since the election is a lot of folks want to start their own group, and then they want to work on police reform, and they're starting from scratch as compared to working with folks who've been working on it for the last couple of decades. So thank you for your call. We are so minus on time. I've got an announcement I've got to do, and then we're going to call this a day. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Coming up today on The Boo, at 9 is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Nammon talks to Jeff Vandermeer about his new novel, Born, a book that's been called simultaneously harrowing, dark, dangerous, funny, and uplifting, from the author of Southern Reach Trilogy. Excuse me. And at 11:30, the film show looks at Portland history on film with new projects that explore the history of Vanport and the Portland Rose Festival. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you didn't get to become a member during our spring membership drive, no worry. Just go to kboo.fm and click on donate, and you will be a member just like that. I want to thank you, John. I want to thank my secret partner today. And I want to thank you all for listening. And I'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Good morning, it's 8:58, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco on Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Journalist Chris Hedges and award-winning cartoonist Joe Sacco wrote the best-selling book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, together. Their talk includes a discussion about sacrifice zones, areas in America that have been offered up for exploitation in the name of profit, progress, and technological advancement. Again, that's Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco, Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Good morning, this is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know.